Sri Aurobindo as the future. In the last two or three days, we had seen a review of India's spiritual history. And I think today we'll go a step forward and see what are the conditions of the world today and how Sri Aurobindo fits into this. Because we are seeing in the evolution of the stages of spirituality in India, we have come to the point where this Vedic truths had to be imbibed on the level of the body, and we are said it is there that Sri Aurobindo comes into picture, because it is he who has concentrated on this manifestation of the higher truth on the level of the body. But when we focus our attention on the world as it is today, or the level that general mankind has reached today, we have a bit of a different picture. Recently, I was going through some papers and I saw in this Auroville magazine, not Auroville, this is the from Singapore, a journal comes, and I happened to look into it. There's a paragraph here which I would like to read out, where Sri Aurobindo succinctly describes the world and the mankind's situation today. Sri Aurobindo says, modern science has encouraged, more or less indirectly, both by its attitude to life and its discoveries, another kind of barbarism. For it can be called by no other name, that of the industrial, the commercial, the economic age, which is now progressing to its culmination and its close. The economic barbarism is essentially that of the vital man, who mistakes the vital being for the elf, for the self, and accepts its satisfaction as the first aim of life. So you can see here, Sri Aurobindo calls the present age the age of economic barbarism. And he further explains why he calls it so. Just as the physical barbarian makes the excellence of the body and the development of physical force, health and prowess his standard and aim, so the vitalistic or economic barbarian makes the satisfaction of wants and desires and the accumulation of possessions his standard and aim. You see how wonderfully it describes the present age, long back, 50 years back maybe. Yeah, it was 1915, almost 80 years back now. But this applies today to the maximum. He says, the satisfaction of wants and desires and the accumulation of possessions is standard and aim. His ideal man is not the cultured or noble or thoughtful or moral or religious, but the successful man. To arrive, to succeed, to produce, to accumulate, to possess is his existence. The accumulation of wealth and more wealth, the adding of possessions to possessions, opulence, show, pleasure, a cumbrous, inartistic luxury, a plethora of conveniences, life devoid of beauty and nobility, religion vulgarized or coldly formalized, politics and government turned into a trade and profession, enjoyment itself made a business, This is commercialism. And I'm sure there couldn't be a better definition of the present state of affairs, where he has described every little activity that we are doing at present. To the natural, unredeemed, economic man, beauty is a thing otiose or a nuisance, art and poetry a frivolity, or an ostentation and means of advertisement. His idea of civilization is comfort. His idea of morals, social respectability. His idea of politics, the encouragement of industry, the opening of markets, exploitation and trade following the flag. His idea of religion, at best a pietistic formalism or the satisfaction of certain vitalistic emotions. He values education for its utility in fitting a man for success in a competitive or it may be a socialized industrial existence. Science for its useful inventions and knowledge, the comforts, conveniences, machinery of production with which it arms him, its power for organization, regulation, stimulus to production. The opulent plutocrat and the successful mammoth capitalist and organizer of industry are the supermen of the commercial age and the true, if often occult, rulers of its society. I think when I read this long back, but recently when I was going through these pages, here we are. Maybe he foresaw it or he prophesied, but the words couldn't be better to describe the present state of affairs. Yet this is the stage we are at present. And now what we need in an analysis in Sri Aurobindo's, again, Ideal of Human Unity, no, this is in Human Cycle, he calls this the stage of the rational. He has divided again the human evolution, social evolution, into three sections. He calls it infrarational, rational, and suprarational. This stage which we have described now is called the rational. So this is where we have got stuck up. When mind dominates, or when mind is the sole ruler, then this is what happens to our lives. When we think that mind alone is the supreme guide in our life, this is what is the kind of life we lead and we are forced to lead. In fact, I mean there's a longer description, but we will leave it at that because we are living in this modern age and we know it only too well. So in another place, he describes how this mind. In fact, here is a sentence which I wanted to bring to your notice. He says, this economic age which is now progressing to its culmination and to its close. So almost after 80 years after he wrote this, we do see a kind of a culmination of this age of rationalism. Well, how you would say, how do we see it? How do we know it? Because we are still swimming on the wave of this economic age. But Sri Aurobindo's there, he says, yes, we can see its close because there are some cracks in the empire of the mind. In fact, he says, all this question of this violence, the sense of insecurity, the sense of boredom, all that we see because of which you see all that is happening around in the world, is basically because mind has come to a dead end. Mind is not able to guide us anymore because it has vulgarized morality, it has vulgarized religion, it has vulgarized ethics. All these values with which we were guiding our life previously, it has pulled down, questioned, doubted. So that is why he says we have come to a kind of an end. So there is this, on this level, this horizontal level, he calls it. Horizontal level means on the level of the mind, we are no more able to bring into our life even that peace, that joy, that quietude which our forefathers had got in their simple life. So in the haste to make ourselves richer, we have made our life more complex. And this complex life has made us a prison in which we are all bound. So there Sri Aurobindo says, this is the mind's malady. This is the malady of the present generation. This is the malady of the present age. But then, what is the solution? Well, simply, he would say, this kind, the collapse of the mind's reign is a suicide of Narcissus. Well, I think you have heard of this story of Narcissus. He is a Greek hero who is very beautiful to look at. And he looks at his image in the water. And he finds himself so handsome, so beautiful. But then when he tries to grab that image, of course, it is a reflection in the water. He cannot. So similarly, the present age, he says, is the collapse of the mind's reign is the suicide of Narcissus, who had fallen in love with his own image, but could never possess it. All our present efforts in commercialism are an apt proof of man's self-love. To look better than what we really are. To spend more on outer image to the neglect of the true idol within. The romance with the false self is bound to be suicidal. Love for and adoration of the true self alone is true life, immortality, peace and joy. Well, here in single term, in a very small passage, what we mean is that we have fallen in love with our outer image. We are trying to decorate more and more only the outer image, but we are forgetting the inner true image, which alone can give us the true joy and peace that we are looking for. So as long as we are, all this fiasco of the false self has awakened some elitists of spirit to look towards a different direction and future vision. I mean, some people are sensitive that we are at a dead end. What do we do? And in one place, we come to understand in Sri Aurobindo that as long as we are in this horizontal level is the level of the mind, as long as we are in this two-dimensional life, where we have religion, where you have ethics, where you have the mind as a guide, no solution can come. He says we have to get into the third dimension. And that third dimension is the aerial view. You know, like the cosmonauts who went up into the sky, and what did they see? A beautiful round globe, where the differentiation between countries was not acute, where the whole world was one single unit. So this is the third dimension of a spiritual consciousness, which alone can bring in that sense of oneness. So from where we can see the whole truth, and not this partial, divided truth that matter gives us. So this is the imperativeness of a third dimension. Yesterday we were talking about the gentleman telling us about the India's picture and how these new ideals can be put into the masses. As long as we are on this level, no amount of political theories, social theories, religious theories, ethical theories, we have tried. Sri Aurobindo says, for ages together we have tried all these things. And we have failed. It is not that mankind has not tried. Different philosophers, different poets, different theories, social theories, political theories. He says nothing is going to work. Because on the horizontal level, you can never lift man up. When you want to lift up, I must be standing above. Then only I can lift something below. So if you want to lift humanity up, he says you have got to rise into a higher consciousness, a consciousness beyond the mind. So living on the level of the mind, we can have 100 different theories. From age to age, we can keep changing all our theories. But still, we'll never be able to elevate ourselves. So he says, it's only a superior consciousness, a consciousness beyond mind, which alone can help mankind. So realizing this, he saw the vision, or he foresaw, he gave us a foresight of a vision of the future. So this is how, because a lot of the people, maybe you may be having doubts, some youngsters, and because some people have questioned me, as we have questions here also, that we have got so many people telling us so many things. There are new acharyas, new gurus, telling us how to live a better life. But as I have always repeated, Sri Aurobindo always said, it is not a better man. It is a kind of a new man that is required. Because this kind of perfectioning, trying to perfection this imperfect man, is never going to be complete until and unless we give birth to the true man. And then this true man is what Sri Aurobindo calls as the new man, as the man of the new race. Because his logic, apart from the vision, even on the logical level, it is very simple. He says, look at a rose. It's a perfect flower. The fragrance, the color, the petals. An animal has its full gunas. A lion is a lion. It has a full characteristic. It is not half lion and half flower or half plant. A plant is not half plant and half animal. An animal is fullness, a full manifestation in itself. A flower is a completeness in itself. Is man, as he is today, complete in himself? He says, analyze that. Because we cannot take pride, as some of our Western thinkers say, man is the highest creation of God. So Sri Aurobindo would say, if he is the highest creation, how can he have that much of ignorance, so many fallacies, so much of weakness, and ultimately, how can he be mortal? Because man, the true nature of man, is the soul, the immortality. So he said, in this creation, up until now, the only incomplete creation is man. And we are going through the stage, or evolutionary stage, where man is about to be completed. So he says, it's only because we are in this transitory stage, we are not able to understand that this is a transition. And therefore he says, it's wrong for us to think that we are the highest creation of God. Because God, if this is the creation that he meant, then I'm sorry, he is not a supreme God. So therefore, Sri Aurobindo brings in the theory of evolution. Wherein, he says, man at present is at a mental level and mind's consciousness is that of division, of ignorance, of fights, of quarrels. But he is about to go beyond. And this about to go beyond is what he says, the evolutionary crisis. And Sri Aurobindo would say, at present, mankind is passing through this evolutionary crisis. And because of this evolutionary crisis, we have got so many problems. Otherwise, 200 years back, there was not an evolutionary crisis. Mankind had always problems, but mind and science and religion and ethics came to his rescue. But today, all over the world, mind has collapsed. Mind has surrendered. So he would say, this is because we are about to go into the next stage of evolution. And therefore, he brings in this question of a new consciousness. Because what is important, one of the things that mind has done, is it has broken, or it has given us piecemeal pictures of man. That is why we say this is an Indian, he is a European, he is divided. But if you want to have a whole image, if I even take medicines, as I have told you yesterday or day before, that we have got such partial vision of things that we have lost the total image of man. In fact, nowadays we are getting back so many sciences, like I was telling Manik Bhai, we have got this Reiki, we have got pranic healing, where they are bringing in the concept of the whole man. And this vision of the whole man is only symbolic of the new consciousness, which really brings in the vision of the whole world, whole earth, wherein we can all unite. So this way, Sri Aurobindo emphasizes that mind is not the basis of a unity of mankind. It cannot be your total guide. It is only a higher and a new consciousness. So in this light, we would see what he says about this new consciousness, about the future of this new consciousness towards which we are moving. I would like to clarify one point here. When we read many authors telling us about the future, this 21st century we are going to have a society like that, or some people in Hyderabad, I know there is a book, somebody has published even a book, a huge volume telling us about what is going to happen in the next 100 years. I'm sure you must have also come across in Gujarati and other languages. But Sri Aurobindo differs with all these people who prophesy the future. Because for most of us, future means time. The next 2055, 2065, it's a matter of time. Next 60 years, 50 years, what's going to happen? But for Sri Aurobindo, who takes the stand of evolution of consciousness, he says the future is not time. Future is a consciousness. It is a new consciousness that we have to look forward to, and not the factor of time. Many people say, 2000 something great is going to happen. 2000 is a date in time. It doesn't mean on that day there will be a miracle and a new man will come. But it can be the new consciousness has already come or is going to come. So Sri Aurobindo is not interested in the next millennium for the sake of years. He is not going to say it in the next 50 years what is going to happen. But what he foresees is the coming of a new race. Not foresees what he has foreseen already. So for Sri Aurobindo, the future is a new consciousness which is manifesting itself very quietly, unknowingly, but is already there. As a mother explained in one of her talks, that the new world slides into the old world. It never comes with a bang. It just slides into the whole old thing. So that there's not much of a rupture. It tries to see there's not much of a disturbance. But if man is some people are ready to receive it, there won't be any rupture. Otherwise, if there's a resistance, there'll be a breakdown. As Sri Aurobindo wrote in the last chapter of the Idol of Humanity, that if mankind consents to be spiritualized, then he doesn't have to pass through crushing circumstances. If mankind resists the spiritual life, he will have to go through crushing circumstances. So what we see in the world at present are those crushing circumstances because we are not ready. We are not accepting. Now in this situation, what do we say by this acceptance? Well, here, it's not the question of all of us accepting. In fact, for the coming of the new race, there are two conditions the Sri Aurobindo gives. He says, one is that there must be a few individuals. He would say, first, few individuals must recreate themselves in the image of the Spirit. And secondly, the common man must be ready to receive the idea and the power of the spiritual truth. So what are the two things? He says, a few individuals, he doesn't say the whole of mankind, he says a few individuals must recreate themselves in the image of the Spirit. This is what we were emphasizing yesterday. For any new spiritual revolution, we don't want masses. We want a few individuals to open themselves and to really struggle. Yes, these few individuals have to be the pioneers. These few have to be the elite people who always go in the avant-garde, who lead the movement. So Sri Aurobindo in one of his letters, in fact, said, if I have 100 true disciples, my work will be done. So you see, he didn't want 10,000 people or 1 million people. He wanted a small number of people who could open themselves, as he writes here, this is his own words, recreate themselves in the image of the Spirit. That means, in the become the true yogis, the true sadhaks, who will open themselves to Mother and Sri Aurobindo. And very interestingly, those of you who know Champak Bhai, Mother had said, he is one of that hundreds. So you can imagine what is the standard of a sadhak of Sri Aurobindo. If Mother says Champak Lal is one of those 100 sadhaks that Sri Aurobindo was looking for. So that is a kind of utter surrender, complete surrender and opening to the new force. So Sri Aurobindo says here, that is what is required. Number one, and it is there. And number two, the common man must be ready to receive the idea and the power of the spiritual truth. Now this is where comes the need and the necessity of such groups, of such centers. Because in another place, Mother explains very clearly that there must be some pioneering individuals, but there must be also groups, small groups, centers where some groups in a collectivity prepare and receive this idea. Now remember, this is a very important word, receive the idea and the power of the spiritual truth. This group, this collective group of 50 or 500 or 200 need not be the level of Champak Lal and Nalinikanta Gupta. But if this group opens its mind itself, you see, what is important today is that mind must accept the new truth. Because as usually, we do not want to accept anything beyond mind. But what Sri Aurobindo says is that if there are groups of people who surrender their mind to this concept even, idea is, receive the idea. You don't have to do even sadhana, that is a higher demand. But the lowest demand is that at least open your minds and believe that there is a new truth that is dawning. That there is a higher race than that of man. That there is a new consciousness that is coming down. If the barriers of the mind can be broken, and if there are small pockets all over the world which receive this concept, that is itself a great work done. If we can humbly accept, yes, there is a higher future than that of man, we would make the whole work much easier. So this is what is expected of the small centers of consciousness. Wherever they may be in the world, this is the basic thing that is accepted. That is why in one place, long back in 1914 or 12, Mother, when she was writing her agenda in France, she had said that the new knowledge and wisdom must be spread. It must be rewritten in modern tongue, and it must be spread. And when she comes to Pondicherry in 1914, Sri Aurobindo starts writing his Arya. And Arya means it was a journal in which he wrote all the major works, starting with Life Divine, Synthesis of Yoga, Foundations, on the Veda, etc. So for the first time, the old knowledge of the Vedas, it was being rewritten in a modern tongue. But remember, rewritten means not like the, again, translating. It was like this, Sri Aurobindo is like that Upanishadic rishis who have re-experienced the Vedic experience and writing it in a modern tongue. Just as the Upanishadic rishis have rewritten Vedic truths in the metaphysical language, here, after centuries and centuries, comes again a great rishi who rewrites that ancient wisdom in a modern tongue. And that is how, and that is why, when people asked him, why use English, he was a master of Sanskrit. But this is once where Sri Aurobindo had to take the whole world into consideration, had it been Sanskrit or Bengali, it would have been only limited to India. That's why he uses this master tongue, master language, English. And perhaps that is one of the secrets why he was even sent to England, because he had to capture the perfect language, because language, and always mother said, English is going to be the international language, and it is today, as we can all see that. So this is how new knowledge was, and the old knowledge was rewritten, re-experienced and rewritten in Sri Aurobindo. And there the mother says, this knowledge must spread in the world. It is not in the question of conversion. She did not believe in converting people. But when the new knowledge comes and people at least believe, because I'm sure all those people to whom we speak to, and even including us, including me, we do not really practice all that is said here. But at least I'm sure in my mind, there is no doubt, even for a moment, about the descent of the new consciousness. So in my mind, the barrier is broken, that I'm completely 100% sure in my mind that the new race is an absolute truth, is the truth of tomorrow. I may see it or not, it doesn't matter. But my mind, there's no iota of doubt. So like that, if he says there are some minds prepare themselves and accept the truth idea, that will be a great beginning. And then he says, Sri Aurobindo notes that if these two conditions are not fulfilled simultaneously, then like in the past, the spiritual age may come like a big wave and then recede, leaving behind a few bright shells on the shore. In the past, all the spiritual movements have failed because the pioneering spiritual figures could not find an enduring foundation in human life. You see, this is the secret. Or the other day, the gentleman was asking me, India has got so many great spiritual figures. Why is the condition of India still like that? This is where the answer is. Sri Aurobindo says, in the past, this kind of a simultaneous movement must be there. A few individuals and the supporting group. So in the past we had only great individuals, great Vivekanandas, great Ram Mohans, great Sri Ramakrishnas, great yogis. But a follow-up group simultaneously lacked. That is why, although we had great ideals in the Vedic times, the Upanishadic times, they were meant for individuals. Groups never followed. That was the lacuna of Indian society, that it gave full growth, spiritual growth possibility to individuals. But the society remained where it was. It did not concentrate on a collective activity. We were left to our small groups, small dharmas, small creeds. But whereas individuals became great saints, great yogis. So once again he says, if again in the present age also, this simultaneous individuals and the support group is not there, maybe spirituality will come and go away, leaving behind some bright shells on the seashore of time. So this is the danger that he is pointing to. And now what is that great future? What is that new race? Well, when we see Savitri, there are plenty of chapters there, plenty of lines. And of course in his volume 17 also, he has given full details of what this new race is going to be. But basically, in fact, on the individual level, the man of the future or the new race will not have the ego. The ego will be substituted by his soul. That means we as human beings, just as we are guided by the ego as the center of our being, the new man, the center will be his Atman or his psychic being. So he would have realized that his entity, his central being is his psychic being. So that means, take on the common level, we have all seen, I have seen Nalnida, I have seen Champakbhai, I have seen others also, great people, in whom we see the action of ego is almost nil. They have got such a direct contact with the divine consciousness or the soul consciousness that all their acts are guided by that. That means their mind is not a thinking, rational mind which is groping for knowledge. They have a direct intuition. Because what comes from the divine Atman is a pure knowledge, is a sure knowledge. There is no more groping. And what comes from the through the level of emotion is not ignorance or jealousy or violence or anger, but a pure feeling of love and compassion and unity. What comes from the physical is not this disease and death, but it will be immortality. So this is why Sri Aurobindo says, being Swarat, he would be Samrat. This is from the Gita, you know. He would be a master of himself and master of his surroundings. Because as such a man, for him, even the surroundings mold themselves. I mean, in Champakbhai's case, I can give you dozens of examples where the events, circumstances, people, they all came to him because he just wished it to happen. So for a spiritual man, for a man of the new race, the circumstances will be always congenial. There will not be any circumstances that go against his wish. So even the outer events, they classify themselves in such a way that his path, his wish, his work gets easier. Whereas for us in the human beings, we have to struggle at every moment because we don't know the next moment what's going to happen. We don't know who is going to come and disturb my peace or anything. But here, he would be Samrat as well as Swarat. So master of himself and master of the circumstances around him. And on the collective level, Sri Aurobindo goes to say, a community and society formed of such individuals cannot but be an organic expression of the collective soul of humanity, giving to each individual wide-ranging possibilities to manifest his unique contribution. Well, on the collective level, these are very simple truths, I'm not describing much. What would be the collective level of such people? Well, on a very rock bottom level, if those of you who have come to Pondicherry, you will see, well, yesterday I wanted to tell the gentleman that it is not the question of a mass being prepared. And as I was insisting, if each individual tries to live within, and a collectivity of such people becomes a heaven. Well, in ashram we have not achieved that. But already you can see the rudiments of that. You see, why we say that we want each individual to try. In ashram, nobody preaches others. The trustees never preach us to do what to do. Even the mother herself never preached us to do what. You should do this or that. She always said, look within. You will be guided from within. So if there is a collectivity of such aspirants even, not even transformed people, even aspirants, then you will see the change in the collective life. So this is where mother always envisaged when she started Auroville, that there will be small pockets of similar pockets of Auroville all over the world. Because people aspiring, this is a community of people aspiring for such a life. And if this intensity is there, you will already see a great change in the collective life. This is how when we tell the youngsters, it is not they try to have the superhuman achievement. Even if there are 10 such aspirants, you will see the change that they can bring in the collective life. So the new race, of course, where each individual has the connection with his Swarat, has a connection with the psychic being. So what happens in such a collectivity, each person will be fulfilling the work he wants. Like in a garden, there are roses and there are lotuses and there are other flowers. Well, each flower has its proper place. So similarly, as we have an example in ashram or in Auroville, in fact, the mother, in fact, in the beginning had said, each individual will contribute his inner beauty, his inner capability. Nobody will tell, no, you have got to do that, you are supposed to do that, you should be in this position. So it is a free self-expression, or to put it otherwise, a free expression of one's self. So this is where it will be the most harmonious collectivity, where there will not be competition, will not be the guiding light. Because in the present society, competition, cutthroat competition, is the sole guiding light of a collective living. But there, it will not be existing at all. I mean, some of these features, He goes into great detail in the last two chapters of the Life Divine. And I'm sure, I think in the year before last when my father was here, he must have covered those characteristics. But now I would like to take up a new point. Because such visions of the future, some people, because in Pondicherry long back, about 6 years back, there was a conference on Sri Aurobindo. When we spoke about this vision of Sri Aurobindo of the future, they said, it's fine. I mean, it's a nice vision. Is they believe it or not? But it's a vision for the devotees of Sri Aurobindo. It is, what is the basis? There are Alvin Toffler, there is X, Y, Z. They have all foreseen a future of mankind. Why should you think that Sri Aurobindo's vision of the future is the vision, or is the vision that is going to complete or fulfill itself? Well, yes, there are skeptics. Not all in the audience are Sri Aurobindo's disciples. And I thought it was a rational question. So, in order to answer that, even at that time I thought about that, and I went into Mother's works and Sri Aurobindo's own works. Then what is the basis of Sri Aurobindo's vision? Is it, one thing is, of course, Sri Aurobindo can say or has said, I have seen, as in the lines from Savitri, as most of you know, Sri Aurobindo says, I saw them cross the twilight of an age. I saw them means the new creation, the new beings, the new people. He says, I saw them cross the twilight of an age, the sun-eyed children of a marvelous dawn, the massive barrier breakers of the world, the architects of immortality. So Sri Aurobindo says, I saw them. Well, being a great yogi, a great visionary, a great man of the supramental consciousness, he could see. But how do you tell this to the common man, to a non-Sri Aurobindonian, to a skeptic who says all this is meant only for Sri Aurobindo's devotees, not for others? Well, there, if we study Sri Aurobindo's records of yoga, recently the archives in the ashram have brought out his records of yoga. That means in early 1910, when he was in Pondicherry, he had done for several years immense tapasya. And as a scientist, he was noting down every little thing that he was achieving on the spiritual level. Like a chemist in the lab would really note down and jot down in small notes what is the results of a certain experiment. So Sri Aurobindo also noted down in short phrases his own experiences. And there we see, quite many times Sri Aurobindo says, I have achieved the Trikala Drishti. I have got the Trikala Drishti by which I am able to see the past, present and the future. So as a yogic practice, leave alone as an avatar or the supramental being, that is from the other side, but as a yogi, he achieved this Trikala Drishti. Well, you may say, well, many have achieved. It's true. Trikala Drishti is a yoga that can be achieved by any one of us. It is a science. It is a practical science in Indian yoga. Anyone interested can achieve it with a great bit of tapasya. But in Trikala Drishti also, there are some levels. Sri Aurobindo here has given us three different levels, because there are different varieties of Trikala Drishti, not just one. I'll just give you those. He says, one is the external means. I mean, the lowest level of Trikala Drishti is the external means, such as omens, dreams, and astrology. That means this is very common. We go to an astrologer, he tells you your past, present, you go to a palmist. But that is the lowest external means. That means seeing your palms, the stars, etc. But there is, on the higher level, Sri Aurobindo would say, on the subliminal means, there are certain doors opening from the inner onto the outer consciousness, which make an occasional but insufficient power of divert retrovision of the past, circumvision of the present, and prevision of the future. That means, higher than this astrologers and a palmist, there are this subliminal means. That means there are subtle worlds